All right, we are very fortunate now to welcome to the show Jack Bennett, co-founder of Oddbug Studio and game designer behind the Tales of Iron series. Jack, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for having us.
I'm excited to have you. I'm excited to talk about Tales of Iron. I have been in study mode the past few days because you are one of my most requested developers to have onto the show. And so I have been fast becoming an amateur expert in Tales of Iron in the last few days, which has been fascinating, fun, and intimidating, which has been a blast.
Well, I hope you enjoyed diving in. We call it the Ratdom, so I hope you enjoy exploring the Ratdom.
Thus far, absolutely. Very, very impressed and fascinated as well. Before we talk about Tales of Iron, the series, I would love, though, to learn more about Oddbug Studios. You guys are based out of the UK, is that correct?
Yeah, so we're like a small studio. There's only five of us. We were based in Manchester, but now we're all like all over the country after COVID. But we initially started out of uni. So me, Dan, and Martin, the three founders, we went to uni together. We started a small studio, and then we met Matt and Nathan, the two coders. And yeah, we've been going almost 8-9 years. Maybe it's 10 years this year, actually. I think it's 10 years we've been going this year. So yeah.
Well, congratulations on a decade of making games. Was it Tales of Iron that was your first project?
No. We had our first game was called The Lost Bear, which was like a 2D VR game for the PSVR and Oculus Rift. And that was actually Dan's project from university. And we turned that into a game for another publisher called Fabric. And then after that, Tales of Iron was our next game.
I was looking at footage of The Lost Bear, and I guess I should have double-checked. I thought that came out in between Tales of Iron. So that was really the studio's first efforts.
Yeah, that was our first like experience of making a game. We was making a 2D game, we was making a VR game. So yeah, it was pretty intense. So with Tales of Iron, we wanted to go back to just purely 2D game, focus on the mechanics, focus on the art.
I noticed quite a bit of a color palette similarity between The Lost Bear and the Tales of Iron, or Tales of Iron 1 anyhow.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. Like all of our games, we kind of want to do that sort of like Studio Ghibli thing where they all kind of take part in the same universe, mm-hmm. kind of like Pixar as well. They all take part in the same universe and they've all got the same feel. And it makes it interesting to see where you think they fit in the timeline of the universe.
Very cool. Okay, very cool then. I find that interesting and fascinating. I have to ask, when we look at the Tales of Iron series, and I suppose the first game and subsequently the second game, how do you describe the series? Because when I look at it and when I read about it, I see comparisons to Dark Souls, Salt and Sanctuary, and most remarkably The Witcher for a couple reasons.
Yeah, I would say like at its core, it's like an action RPG, but it has a lot of Souls-like elements within it. So, you know, we've got that sort of strong story-based gameplay where you're playing as a specific character playing in a world that is the RPG side of it, but then we've got that sort of heavy weighted combat where you're like your armor and weapons actually affect how you play. The combat's difficult, you have to understand the enemy, which is that sort of Souls like addition to it. So I'd say it sits somewhere between them.
Interesting. Okay. And of course the allusions to The Witcher are all that much more enjoyable given that you guys have Doug Cockle, the voice of The Witcher, narrating the game.
Oh, yeah, like 100%. Like The Witcher, I'd say The Witcher and probably God of War in a lot of ways are like two of our big influences for Tales of Iron because, I mean, Martin, the environment artist, he's from the Czech Republic, so we've got that sort of like Eastern European heritage anyway. But we always want our games to feel almost like sort of like a Grimm's fairy tale. So it's got this fairy tale cutesy imagery to it, but we kind of bring in this grim, dark world as well, which I think is something The Witch is kind of well known for as well. So I think that's why we get that comparison. And then, yeah, obviously having Doug's voice, his voice is just so like attached to that dark fantasy world now that he fits our game so well.
It is such a cool juxtaposition in the audio design to kind of hear the weapons and hear Doug's voice, and then to get instructions from other animals by way of pictures and, I dare say, intentionally obnoxious sounds that kind of accompany it.
Well, there's a series of the old, like, kids TV series in the UK called The Clangers. And mm-hmm. they all talk to each other through, like, pipe whistles and that sort of thing. So mm-hmm. it was a way for us to, like, bring character to the different races. Everyone's got their kind of different sound without us having to have, like, a human voice. Because, like, that's, like, a big part of it, right? We wanted people to play the game but kind of be able to make their own story and get their own interpretation of it rather than us giving them a direct line of this is what's happening. And it just lets people kind of read between the lines a lot more and get their own out, like, come from it.
It's the first, and when booting up the first game and playing through the very beginning, the tutorials, it was very easy for me to understand what it was you were asking me to do. And I was a little startled by that because so many games default into reading now. Yeah. It was almost a conscious choice for you guys to not give words on the screen.
Oh, 100%. Like, we, like, people on the team have got dyslexia, people that are playing probably have got it or have got, like, different reading levels. So just having a basic thing like text in the game automatically removes some people from getting the same level of enjoyment from it as other people. Mm-hmm. So trying to remove that as much as possible and break down that to just, like, basic imagery means everyone can play it at any point. And that allows people to, again, a much broader genre of people to be able to play the game and enjoy it on the same level as someone else. I mean, I love The Witcher and I love Elder Scrolls as much as the next guy, but there is a lot of reading in that. And this is, like, a simpler, easier into the games or into RPGs.
We've brought up The Witcher a number of times, and I think its influences are clear in Tales of Iron overall. But with Doug Cockle, I think Rick on Twitter was asking how you even ended up with him narrating your game. Like, he's a famous voice actor. You guys were this indie studio at the time.
It was crazy. Like, we wasn't even planning on having a narrator. We was trying to kind of do it all out without it. And then the publisher was like, I think we need to, like, think about having a narrator. And we was like, well, if we're going to have a narrator, this guy would be the best guy for the job. Like, we'd love his voice. It's going to fit. And they was like, don't worry about it. We'll go sort it out. And yeah, they showed him the game. They showed him the artwork. And, like, he loved it and he was on board. And, you know, he's there for game one and he's come back for game two. So he must really love it too.
That has to be kind of, I suppose, inspiring and uplifting, particularly before the game goes out, because now their Tales of Iron has expectations and a legacy, but before the game releases, you've got this guy signed on board. That had to feel, I suppose, like a shot in the arm of a good vibes, a good dopamine hit.
Oh yeah, like, I mean, Doug signing up to it means that he believes in it, which is nice, because, like, at that point in development, so few people get to see it, it's hard to, like, get a gauge of what people think of it. So to know that Doug's interested in any way to work on it and sign up off of the back of the first one, then, you know, that's great. And, like, Doug brings with him a whole load of people that really enjoy his voiceover and his work, so it's always nice to have Doug on board. He's good to work with as well. Like, he's so easy to work with, like, having him one-to-one, he's reading the lines, and the majority of the time it's just like, yep, you smashed that first time, well done.
Well, of course, audio design goes well beyond Doug's admittedly iconic voice. How important is audio design in crafting a series like Tales of Iron?
Oh, massively. Like, one of the big things we did with Tales of Iron is, like, I mean, Francesco, the audio designer, would be able to answer this better, but I think the word's diegetic. The diegetic sound is what we use. So that means, like, that means in-world sound. So, like, every sound that you hear is actually a sound within the game rather than, like, music played over the top. So whenever you hear music in the game, it is coming from a musician, and as you walk closer to that musician, it will get louder and fill your volume. So we try and use the audio design as a way to make the world feel like a living, breathing world, because that's what we want. We don't want you to feel like you're playing a game. We want you to feel like you're entering a world and you're spending 8 to 10 hours exploring that world as a character. And that just allows you to be like so much more bonded to the characters and to the story and understand the mechanics on like a much deeper level.
I see. That makes good sense. Was that something that you guys had to work on or refine in crafting the first game? Or did it feel like just kind of a natural portion in development?
Well, it was something that we always wanted because we made a demo, first of all, like just to pitch the game. And that was always something we kind of wanted. We wanted that realistic feel to the world because, okay, yes, you're playing as like medieval rats in armor, but making that world feel real makes the situation feel believable and makes the stories connectable. And it was something we worked on. Like, it's useful in a gameplay sense as well, because like you're able to, even if you're not looking at the game, you're able to tell what side of you the enemy's coming from. You're able to tell if you're that far away from a save bench. All of these little minute details in the sound spectrum actually allow you to kind of navigate the world on like a subconscious level.
Did you find in reception from the first game that players noted those things, or did they go largely unnoticed by the community?
Oh no, like we had a guy, like a blind guy, play the game. Like,
oh, wow.
a fully blind guy was able to like play. I think his wife was sat next to him and talking him through parts of it, but yeah, he was able to like sit there and play the combat and play the game. Yeah. It was definitely been noticed. I think there's still ways we could improve and go further, but you know, Francesco did and the audio guys really did a good job on it. Yeah.
That's really interesting. That's fascinating. I think to me as a newcomer, one of the most striking things that one might notice in seeing the first Tales of Iron is its art style, and that it does take inspiration from other places, games, media, and such. But it also feels wholly its own. And I was wondering if you could talk to me about how you arrived on the art style for the Tales series, the rats, the frogs, the monsters, all of it.
So like the art style in particular, that's more like I say, Martin's from Eastern Europe, Czech Republic, and they have like a big culture of like wood prints, like block wood prints where you carve the wood and ink it and then press it down the paper. Mm. So that's where like the thick black lines kind of come from for all our characters and the world design. That was something that we really wanted to like build upon, because it gave it that storybook feel. It gave it like you were watching a printed book, but actually it's in motion. Mm-hmm. So that was really where the art style come from. In terms of the world and like the rats and the frogs, so the rats are based on, Dan had pet rats, so Reggie, Rem Rem, Bam Bam, Doug, all of these characters, they were actually real rats at one point. Mm-hmm. So that was where they came from. And obviously, like we say, we love The Witcher, we love Elder Scrolls, we love Game of Thrones, like all of these sort of like quasi medieval things. So that was something we really wanted to focus on. And then obviously in classic fantasy, you always have this sort of like goblin orc character, and then frogs just lent themselves to that sort of perfectly. Like it was something that kind of lent in this sort of murky, hiding in the swamps sort of character that would be against the sort of medieval rats, I'd say.
How would you say, or how would you describe the art in Tales of Iron 2 being different than 1? Of course, we just saw the trailer for 2. That has to be exciting, but surely you've taken lessons in refinement in terms of art.
Yeah, so in Tales of Iron 2, we've got much more varied areas. In Tales of Iron 1, we was kind of building the world from the first perspective. So it was like, we need to show you what rats are and we need to show you what the frogs are. So a lot of the areas kind of felt the same, but that was important to get your grounding in what the ratdom is. But now that you've got that base knowledge, we're allowed to like explore much further. So there's like beautiful golden forests with willow trees and silver birches, and then there's the far north of like snow covered dunes, and so that automatically like controls the palette and tells you what's going to be going on. And I think that makes it feel like a much more varied game to the player.
Mm-hmm. I think even in crafting the thumbnail for this episode, it was neat to see such a stark difference between the browns and the hues that came with the first game to this very bright blue white element for the second game.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And I mean, like that leads into other things. Like we've connected it to the sort of, we've got like a day night system now. So like within the game, there is just a world clock that's ticking down, and it goes from day to night. So those hues change as you're playing through the game. So as everyone's playing it, like, their game will look slightly different depending on how quick or slow they're playing through. And like, maybe you'll fight a bat in the middle of the day at a certain point, and somebody else will play it at night. And that really, you know, makes it feel varied and alive and like a real world, like I keep saying.
I'm curious. You guys said you're, as a studio, and I'm leading you here, so bear with me. You're a decade-old studio. First game was The Lost Bear. Then you go to the first Tales of Iron. How long in development was the first game for Tales of Iron?
So Tales of Iron 1, we spent about a year without a publisher, just building a vertical slice, just showing everything that we kind of want. We took that to the publisher, to United Label. And then, yeah, they gave us the funding, and we was working on that for just over 3 years. So in total, from the very first day of development to the last was about 4 years.
So a 4-year development time, roundabouts, on the first game. How quickly was the inception and creation of, or work starting on, Tales of Iron 2?
So Tales of Iron 2 was started straight after the release of Tales of Iron 1. So September is the 3-year anniversary of Tales of Iron 1's release. So we've been working on it almost 3 years. But like that's the thing. Like when we came up with Tales of Iron, it wasn't just this one game. Tales of Iron is a big world that we've got lots of stories in that we want to tell. So there's definitely other places we want to go to within the random other characters. So I know at least 2 or 3 games in advance where I'd like to go with it.
That implies that somewhere off camera, there's this big MCU-style whiteboard with timelines and you know, names of games right there. Is there some amalgamation of that somewhere?
Well, I've got like a big Bible of like written notes that I'm like, this character did this then, and this did this, but we're staying on like a fairly close timeline. We're not going to go crazy with it, but I really like the interconnection of characters and stories, so that like, if you play 2 and you haven't played 1, then you'll get a good game and you'll love it as much as people love the first one. But if you've played both, you're going to meet people that you remember, and you're going to know how their life was affected and how it's changed. And yeah, that's what I really like, and that's what I'd like to do going on into the future.
Prior to us recording, and then right at the very beginning, I alluded to the fact that I was fairly unfamiliar with Tales of Iron and have had to basically do some homework in prepping for this interview. And one of the things I found and saw was just how much the community really loves these characters. They really seem to latch in. Chris over on Twitter was asking whether this is a sequel, prequel. Does it run parallel to the first game? Tales of Iron 2, you mentioned, would have kind of crossover characters. You've crafted a deep world. Where does the second game exist in tangent to the first?
So the second game happens about 2 to 3 years after the first game. So the first DLC we did for Tales of Iron 1 was called Bloody Whisker. And there was an arena fight, and you had like 5 people in the arena, and then that unlocked a secret room within the castle. And the last boss within that arena was Eivor and Arlo. And Arlo is now the main character in Tales of Iron 2. So there's quite a direct link there. Arlo's grown up. He's now an adult or a young adult. So yeah, 2 to 3 rat years in terms of the difference. So yeah, it's a direct sequel.
Interesting. Okay. Did it catch you off guard how much people or how many people truly seem to identify with the characters in your story? Because offhand, you're talking about rats and frogs, you know, and yet people are invested.
Yeah. No, like, I mean, it's surprising that something as people, it's surprising something we've made has like resonated with people. But at the same time, you know, there's like, there's Redwall, there's Wind in the Willows, there's like, people really like this sort of anthropomorphic characters of animals in like a fantasy world. It's something that really resonates with people, so I'm not surprised that people liked it, but it's nice to know that people like what we did with it.
Tales of One releases, and of course, as with any piece of art, media, and gaming, people let their opinions be heard. What was the most useful piece of feedback that you received from players and critics that you think influences the development of the second one?
That's been like the main thing. Like, we're constantly like trawling through the reviews of Steam. I mean, there's not one piece that I would say sticks out, but what we have done is like correlated what people are saying the most and trying to keep what they're saying the most and remove what they're hating the most. So like, for example, one of the ones was like, they felt like the sort of side quests were like kind of mandatory and they didn't really change that much. So Tales of Iron 2, we've created a whole hunting system. You're going around like tracking beasts, carving materials from them to craft new weapons and armors. So that kind of like fixed that issue of like them not meaning anything. We've given it like a core idea. Another one was just that there wasn't enough. They wanted the game to be longer. So like Tales of Iron 2 is almost double the length of Tales of Iron 1. There's more areas, more places to go. So I feel like we've kind of taken on what the audience is saying and hopefully given them what they're looking for.
How much different in scope and size is Tales of Iron 2 versus 1?
Yeah, so I think 1 had like 5 areas that were medium size and the game ran for about 8 to 10 hours. Mm-hmm. Tales of Iron 2's got 7 areas and runs from about 15 hours to 20 hours. So mm-hmm. Yeah, it's almost double the size. There's more side quests, there's more optional quests, there's more main quests. So yeah, it's a bigger beast, yeah.
My napkin math would say if it took the first game 4 years to craft that level of experience, and you guys are, I mean, you just showed your trailer now, so assumption would be it's within, you know, the foreseeable future that we see Tales of Iron 2. Development has gone faster on this one because of the world already being created.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we already knew what we was doing. We already knew what the combat system was going to be like. We've already got the world set there. So we kind of, all of that work previously that we've done building that Marvel interconnected world is kind of paying off now, in that we knew the story, we knew the characters, we knew the combat. It was just a case of building it and expanding upon it.
Gotcha. Samuel T wrote in over on Twitter, kind of in this same vein, asking if in looking at feedback for Tales of Iron 1, you guys did like a compilation list of compliments or critiques or, and I'm paraphrasing his words here, you know, just looking at what people liked and didn't like. Did you craft a list? Were you watching threads and thumbnail comments? And then my follow-up question to that, is that a healthy way to get feedback, or can that be a little overwhelming?
Yeah, we definitely did that. Like, Steam was our number one place, really, of like looking at feedback and reviews. I don't know. In terms of health, I think obviously when you're on those sort of forums, you get people that the game just didn't connect with, and they're going to be unhappy that they've played a game, or there's going to be issues. So you've got to take everything with like a pinch of salt, that your game is not going to be for everyone and everyone is not going to like your game. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. But if you get these like common denominators, these things that are constantly coming up, whether that's positive or negative, I think that's a good way. I think that's a healthy way, because it's not just one person like giving you sweet nothings or one person being negative to you. It's a common idea, and that was something that's useful to us. Like I say, it was like the quest, the length of the guy. But it was even like small things, like we've gone into the detail of like, oh, we like the combat, but we wish it was like a bit deeper. So we know, you know, we've added in the elemental stuff, we've added in crafting weapons, we've added in flying enemies that actually navigate around. So for us, it was really useful to get that feedback.
You've added in flying enemies now?
Yeah, like we have, like, we call them the Sky Scorchers. You might have seen it in the trailer. Like, they're kind of like our dragons. They're big flying bats. But in the first game, we kind of had flying enemies, but they'd always land. Whereas these enemies actually fly around and fire stuff at you and swoop down at you. Yeah, it's cool.
Is it nerve-wracking to craft such a bigger adventure?
Yeah, I mean, like, it comes with its own challenges, right? It's like you've still got to keep that nice flow and ebb of like what the story's going on, and you've still got to make that world interesting when people are traveling through it. So it does take more effort to realize that. But I think, again, like, doing that means that the whole world feels fuller. The whole world feels more real. It always feels like there's something going on.
This is a unique question, and I grant you that you're on the Xbox expansion pass, but I think we, our audience is quite aware that we love games in all places. I'm curious if, as a developer, because Tales of Iron 1 released, it's on PC, Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, I want to say, Xbox One, Series S, X. You guys are on multiple platforms. Do you see different levels of reception from community? I don't necessarily mean in sales. I mean like in commentary. Or do the gamers kind of generally tend to agree across those platforms?
I think everyone seems to agree on what they're saying. But I think Steam is way more vocal. But I think that's because Steam has just got like an environment of leaving reviews and leaving comments and being in the forums. Whereas like the console players, they don't, it's not really part of the genetic of like leaving a review or anything like that. So everyone, I mean, like if you go on Reddit or you go on Twitter or X as it's called now, you're getting players from everywhere, or players that have bought it on multiple platforms. Like that's the mad one for me. Like they bought it on PC and they've got it on their Switch to play on the go. So I think most people are pretty positive and they're happy to talk about it. They're pretty platform agnostic. It's just Steam is a bit more vocal in what they're saying.
I think Oddbug themselves, as a studio, you all feel very platform agnostic as well. You are in almost every space save for mobile. Any considerations for limiting that, maybe not exclusive, but limiting the scope of putting it on multiple platforms or expanding into the mobile space?
We wouldn't want to limit it to anyone because like anyone can have any console. The console war is a foolish conversation anyway. So as long as you're playing games and enjoying games, then I do not care what platform you're playing on. Mm-hmm. But in terms of mobile, that's interesting. Something we've looked at, but the whole business of mobile is a completely different beast to the business of like consoles and PC. The pricing, the way it works, it's just that's a whole nother like needs looking into, I guess. But it would be interesting to see where we can go with that.
It's been on my mind lately, I suppose, as I watch Xbox expand into a cloud space. Call of Duty Warzone Mobile is fresh on my mind because that just launched. I mean, I've been playing a lot of games on mobile with a backbone just as I test them out as a content creator. And when I see games like Tales of Iron, I feel like this would be great in kind of a mobile space. And I'm sure Switch players would feel that themselves. But the pricing is fascinating to me. And feel free to dance out of this question if you'd like. But I'm curious how you come about pricing a game. In general, like what's the right price? I see so many experiments in that, from indie to AAA, successes and failures across the board and figuring it out.
Yeah, I mean, this is why I have a publisher, because I have no idea either. Like that is the good thing about having a publisher, is like we are allowed to just get on with making the game. Mm-hmm. And then we have a publisher that handles like selling it and marketing it and the smoke and mirrors and backroom stuff that I have no understanding of. I'll just, here's a good game. Please take it somewhere and do whatever you need to do with it.
Is that the great relief? Because you are a co-founder of Oddbug Studio, which brings with it pressures and excitement. But when you're able to sign on with a publisher that you're comfortable with and just say, hey, I want to make the game. Yeah. Is there a relief there in that front?
Oh yeah, 100%. Like, there is no doubt about it that selling and marketing a game is an entire other hundreds of jobs that need to happen. That if I was doing it as the producer of the team or studio leader, that would be my job. I would not be designing or building the game because I would have way too much to do on that side of it. So having a publisher is the ultimate fix for that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that is... Yeah, I would highly recommend it if you have, because we're just such a small team. If we had a bigger team and we had people to spare, then yeah.
That makes sense. And still, I think about your team size at 5 people, and I look at the scope of Tales of Iron. I feel like you guys are punching above your weight.
Yeah, I think so. We try to. Like, we work hard, but we work hard to make a good game that people are going to enjoy. So hopefully that works out.
you all released Tales of Iron 1 in September of 2001. And again, with no information and just seeing kind of the trailer for the second one, I have to think that you guys see the launch in your, you know, in your sights somewhere. The gaming space has changed quite a bit, at least to my mind, from 2021 to 2024. And that's a short window of time. And yet I feel like it's all different. The logical question comes, do you release on the same platforms, which you guys are slated to do? Do you make use of subscription services, PS Plus, Epic Game Store, Game Pass, or do you just, you know, release a la carte in those places? What kind of things go through your mind as a developer there?
I think for me right now, the interesting thing, slightly scary thing about it was, like, we released Tales of Iron 1 right at the end of COVID, like that spot where people were at home, they were able to play games all day because they, you know, they were locked in their houses. So they had, and people were getting given checks or whatever. So they had the time and space and money to kind of play games. Whereas now, like you say, we're in a completely different world. Like, people are back to their busy lives. They haven't got the time to or money to spare because there's a cost of living crisis. So it's going to be interesting to see how that affects the release of the game. In terms of, like, platforms and, you know, going to subscription services, like, this again, why I have a publisher. I don't have to be in those meetings. I don't have to worry about numbers or figures. I can just be like, we made a good game, please go sell it for us, thank you.
Again, that huge relief. But I think a logical question, just because the world is so different, you know, given that you guys had, I think, a very impressive reception to the first game, do you feel pressure for the second?
Yeah, 100%. Like, it's that awkward second album, isn't it? It's always like, it's the worry, like, is it going to be as good? Are people going to love it? Are we doing what, you know, what they wanted from it? But, you know, we've tried. We've tried to, like I say, look through what people are complaining about, fix that, see what people love, keep that, and create more of it. So hopefully we've achieved everything. Maybe it won't be the perfect thing that everyone loves, but I know for a fact there'll be people out there that love it. And what we've done is exactly what they've asked for. So I'm looking forward to seeing it out there and seeing how people react to it.
I think we got a lot of people that wrote in, and I mentioned quite a few of them in us talking thus far. But we've covered a number of the common questions across multiple people. Can you share our hero's name? Will we see characters from the first game? I feel like we've answered those, but a lot of people were wondering about merch or physical editions. That's, again, another level of something to think about beyond making a game. But is it encouraging to hear those kind of questions?
Oh, yeah. It's super exciting. Like, the fact that people want to be involved in that world beyond just playing the game is, like, you know, that's wonderful. Like, we've made something that people truly connect with. So, like, in terms of physical, that's definitely something we want to do. We still need to, you know, get the deal done with someone to make it happen, but we did it with the first game, so that's exciting. And merch would be fun. I just need to find someone to do it for me again. Like, hopefully the publisher can handle it. If not, we'll have to find someone to do it. But yeah, I'd love to do t-shirts and coats and jumpers and all that sort of stuff.
Because we don't have a release date yet, and I didn't want to overly pressure gameplay elements about Tales of Iron 2, I left some things a bit nebulous here, but I wonder if in our closing minutes, is there anything that either I haven't asked or that you would like to elaborate on further about Tales of Iron 2 specifically?
Yeah, I think it's just the detail we've gone to now with, like, trying to push the mechanics further. So, like, we've got that, like, I keep saying, like, the elemental stuff. So now you've actually got a smithy with, like, a skill tree. Beforehand, we just gave you, like, here's a new weapon, here's a new armor. Now you can actually go out and craft the weapon that you want. So, like, you'll see in the smithy the list, like Monster Hunter, the sort of armors and weapons. And you'll be like, I want to craft this, so I need to go hunt this monster. And you go hunt that monster, and you get materials for it. You bring that back. And then that armor's got, like, fire resistance, or the weapon's got electric abilities. And then you can go out and kind of, some enemies have weaknesses and some have strengths. And so you'll learn, again, on a much deeper level, you'll start to understand the enemies, understand the world. You'll be able to craft a character or Arlo in the way that you want it to be. So you'll be able to be like, I want an armor set that's fully fire resistant, or I want an armor set that's going to give me a bit of everything. So then you can put bits together, and everyone's different Arlo will look slightly different depending on what armor sets they've got together. And then on top of that, the other kind of exciting thing that I'm quite proud of is that within your settlement, in the first game, we did the whole rebuild, and you rebuild the Crimson Keep. But as you rebuilt it, it was just like, now you've got your kitchen, now you've got your smith. In Tales of Iron 2, you're rebuilding Winter's Edge, but you actually get to pick where your settlements are. So like, you get to pick where your chef is, you get to pick where your smith is, your builder is, your shop is. So then, over time, everyone's settlement will look slightly different. And then you've got the day-night system in that. So then as people are playing through, everyone's settlement's going to look different. Everyone's Arlo is going to look different. It's going to be at different times of day. So it's going to be really interesting to see when people are posting screenshots. Nobody's is going to look the same. It's going to be pretty fun.
Certainly, that scope seems to be massively expanded from the first game.
Yeah. It's a lot more in there, yeah.
I have a dreaded question that I ask every developer guest on the show, so prep for this one. And this might be a bit odd because we don't quite know how close to release you are, but are you happy with Tales of Iron 2?
Yeah, I'm happy with Tales. I'm very happy with Tales of Iron in general. I'm happy with how Tales of Iron has been received, and I'm happy with how Tales of Iron 2 is. Like, we've shown some screenshots and we've shown a bit of combat in the trailer, so you've got like a sense of what we're doing. But I think once you're in that world and you can see the parallax and you can see the particle effects, you can hear the enemies, like, that just brings it so much more to life. So I'm very happy with Tales of Iron 2. I'm happy to see that we've got that chance to expand it. I'm happy that we've got to be able to tell more of that tale. And I'm very excited to see people in it and what they think of it.
I'm anxious to find out, one, when your release date is, but two, how that community responds to Tales of Iron 2 as well. Because in learning Tales of Iron as a series, I have seen a lot of love and passion from the community for it.
Yeah, it's going to be really exciting when it comes out. I'm super hyped for it.
Well, I want to thank you, Jack, for being the first guest on kind of my new format and bearing with me as we go through kind of some of the cool learning pains in a new format. So thank you for that. Would you let people know where they can find you on socials, or if they're looking to pre-order Tales of Iron 2, all of that jazz?
Yeah. So yeah, if you just follow us on X at Oddbug Studio, or Instagram at Oddbug Studio. They're always tweeting about the game and screenshots and that sort of thing. And obviously wishlist or like or whatever your platform choice is, just give us a little thumbs up or a heart, and that really helps.
Thank you so much, Jack, for your time today. That is going to do it for this interview, listeners. If you enjoyed yourself, please reach out to Jack on socials. Let him know how much you appreciate his time. Check out the Tales of Iron 2 trailer, which is out there in social spaces now. And as for XEP, we'd be honored if you consider supporting us with a like, a subscribe, or even helping us out to keep the lights on, the content coming by way of Patreon or channel memberships. Have a great rest of your week, everyone. Take care. Thank you.